everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today we want to talk about exaggeration. Exaggeration. Why do people need to exaggerate? Why do people exaggerate? What's exaggeration all about? So that's what we're going to bring to you first. But first, I'll read you a poem. A poem. This is one that I think by R.D. Lang. It goes like this. There is something I don't know that I'm supposed to know. Now, I don't know what it is I don't know, and yet am supposed to know. And I feel like I look stupid if I seem both not to know it and not to know what it is I don't know. Therefore, I pretend I know it. This is nerve-wracking. Since I don't know what I must pretend to know, therefore I pretend to know everything. I feel that you know what I'm supposed to know. But you can't tell me what it is because you don't know that I don't know what it is. You may know what I don't know, but not that I don't know it. And I can't tell you. So you'll have to tell me everything. That's by R.D. Lang. R.D. Lang was a psychiatrist. And this little conundrum he presented about what people were trying to ask him all the time, and people come to you and they say, tell me what it is I need to know, as many people come to me saying that. And then I say, well, what's the question? And the trouble is, I don't know the question. Many people don't even know the question. They don't know what it is that they don't know. So they ask you, tell me everything. Maybe if you tell me everything, somewhere in there, I'll learn what it is I have to know. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So I've been with you for about 19 years here in WBAI, and between 3 and 4 days a week, sometimes one day a week. It used to be even once every other week all the way back then. So I'd say we were averaging about 3 times a week for 19 years. So I'm telling you everything I think I know or I learn along the way. And among the things that I explore are issues that come from you and your letters. And you've sent some letters asking about certain things. Here's a question. Exaggerating. Why do people exaggerate? What's the story about that? Now, there are extensions of exaggerating. There's catastrophizing, which is a word that's fairly new to me, but fairly common. Catastrophizing is where you take something and you turn it into a catastrophe, just what it sounds like, to get a response from someone. And there's the other one, which is aggrandizing, which is making it bigger than it is to make yourself look better. But exaggerating in general is a question, and this is a very good question. Why do people do it? Seems kind of obvious, doesn't it? Some people believe that in order to get attention, they must make things appear bigger than they are. Right? Why, that's why, I guess it's natural to try to attract or gain fear by making yourself bigger than you are. That's what nature does. Think of the peacock. The peacock wants to attract a mate. It puts out these feathers that make it seem bigger than it is. Or bullfrogs, you know, bullfrogs want to attract a mate and they blow up their necks. And or the blowfish, just to protect itself, you know, this little fish is swimming along, feels like it's being attacked. What does it do? Boom, blows itself up. And you can't even penetrate it. So it's, these are defenses, making yourself bigger. Or they're meant to attract. All of nature does it. Some animals even change their colors to attract and intimidate. You know, some baboons will turn red, you know, in certain areas, and they'll try to attack, or certain ones will get red on their chest to kind of threaten the enemy. Why? What it attracts is, it attracts, it says the following. If I'm in a field where there are many competitors, in order for me to compete, I've got to attract you. Now, I don't feel like the alpha gorilla silverback. I don't think I'm the biggest one in town, so I'm going to make believe I'm the biggest one in town. I'm going to stand on a soapbox. See, I'm going to imagine a gorilla standing on a box and saying, "See how big I am?" Right? Well, that's what many people do because they don't feel like the biggest one because there is maybe only one really big one and the rest of them make them believe they're big. In life, people try to make themselves larger than they are, different than they are. What do you call elevator shoes? You remember elevator shoes? Platform shoes is the word for it nowadays. They used to be called elevator shoes. They were. It's when men would take 2 or 3 inches on a pair of shoes and they would wear them to seem taller. Why? Because smaller, you didn't compete among the other peacocks. You know what I mean? So you wore elevator shoes. Women wear high heels, don't they? Or they wear platform shoes because height seems to attract a little more than less height. Well, look at breast implants for women. You know, I mean, women are getting, I've got to be bigger than I am to attract, right? Muscle building for men. I got to have those pecs. You know, I've got to be so big. I got to have six-pack abs. You know, I've got to get this kind of, in order to attract, I have to not just become strong. I have to become ultra-muscular. The bigger you make yourself, the more you reflect, the bigger you make yourself now, the bigger you make believe you are, like wearing shoulder pads in your jackets to make your shoulders seem bigger. It seems that more that you reflect the perception that you're not big enough, right? I mean, it kind of makes sense. If you make yourself bigger, then you're saying, "I'm not big enough." This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking about the need to exaggerate. So what is this "I'm not big enough" stuff? Why aren't people just okay the way they are? So maybe a 34C, you know, would be good enough. So why do you go for the double D, right? Why do you get this hugeness? Maybe a strong body is not enough. The man's got to lift weights until they do what they call big, you know, really big. It seems that the more vulnerable you feel, the more you exaggerate yourself. This is in all of nature. The more vulnerable the animal is, the more it makes himself bigger. I mean, a blowfish, poor little blowfish, tastes like chicken. A blowfish, they're kind of swimming along, and what's their defense? Get big, blow up, you know? So if you are vulnerable, that's one reason. But are we going to therefore say that many people, just everybody who exaggerates, everybody who looks bigger than they are, everybody who makes themselves bigger than they are, it's coming from inadequacy? Well, okay, let's say it is from a sense of inadequacy. Does that necessarily make it abnormal? Maybe, you know, 50%, I think it's, no, 70% of the people believe that they are better than average drivers. See, you can't have 70% of the people believing they're above average. You can't, because then the average wouldn't be there. So if so many people need to build themselves up, then that means that so many people feel like they're not big enough. Okay, so let's go with that. Some people, one of the ways you do it is that you have to have something good to say. So they create something that'll interest somebody. Just like a male bird builds an extra fancy nest to attract a female, or he develops a whole series of songs that he has and warbles to attract the female. You know, much more than you need just to, you know, sing a song like "Come to Me, My Melancholy Baby." Instead, they have like a dozen different songs, 100 different songs. You can't create interest in something by doing something that everybody else does. If you just do the ordinary, you're not going to attract anybody, right? And we're going to get to the bottom of this, what attracts people and why that leads to exaggeration. Exaggeration is a two-way street. See, it is not only the person who exaggerates, but it's the exaggeratee who's involved in this. Maybe we need somebody to exaggerate. That's what we're going to get to. For example, if you want to get attracted, people attracted to you, you could be a comedian, you know, and be funny. You know, the one thing about comedians, they're always on the outside looking in. That's what makes them comics. What makes you a comic is that you could see things in people that seem average and ordinary, and you could talk about them in a way, exaggerate them to make them funny. So a person who is a comedian is always on the outside looking in. A lonely position. But being a comedian does attract people to you. You can have money. And if you walk down well-dressed and you walk down a beach in Jamaica, people are going to flock to you because you have money. They will be attracted to you. If you exaggerate your appearance, if you wear a silk suit, if you drive a fancy car, that will attract people. You can be a performer or an athlete to attract people. I mean, we just saw the Olympics. What's the idea of someone in the Olympics? I want to be admired. I want to be the biggest. I want to be the best. I want to win 8 gold medals. You know, to beat out the guy who won 7 gold medals. So that I could pose for Speedo, which is his big contract. All right. If you look like something extra pretty, like if you wear great clothing, or if you wear fantastic makeup, or if you have implants, how do you look? You know, do you look? Maybe you wear eyeglasses to look very intelligent. Maybe you wear very sharp clothing. Or maybe you're sexually provocative. You walk down the street looking extra sexy, putting out your stuff. You know what I mean? And it all says, look at me, notice me, notice me from the crowd. And if you see me in my natural state, you may not be attracted. I used to live next door in an apartment house to one of the world's most famous models, you know, and I would see her every now and then. I would see her taking out the trash. And when she was taking out the trash, she would take it out. It was an apartment building. She would drag it. She would take herself out in her robe and she'd put it into the garbage room. And she was a wreck. She was emaciated. She looked horrible. But then when she dolled up, one of the most beautiful women in the world. But you would not, I promise you, notice her in the garbage room. You would not say, hey, what a beauty. I was down the Lower East Side recently. Down the Lower East Side, and I was looking around the Lower East Side, and I noticed, I said, you know, I was up the Upper East Side, and I noticed there's a difference between the Upper East Side of New York and the Lower East Side of New York. Lower East Side of New York, everybody was kind of dressed down, kind of grungy, right? Walking around the neighborhood, the clothing were all grayish, there was not much color to it, and it was kind of don't notice me kind of clothing. And then uptown, you go uptown, everybody's strutting their stuff. Everybody looks terrific. You get to a subway stop like 77th Street or 68th Street and Lexington Avenue, and you stand outside of that, and the people are dressed to the hilt. And they're all saying the same thing. Look at me, I'm beautiful. Look at me, I'm beautiful. Look at me, I'm okay. So what's the difference between the Lower East Side and the Upper East Side? In clothing, one may say that on the Lower East Side, people are a little more honest. Or on the Lower East Side, you don't want to attract anybody because you're afraid that not everybody is going to behave in a certain appropriate way. It could be out of fear, or it could just be that it is déclassé. It is not acceptable to be too extraordinary, to be strutting your stuff in that neighborhood. You know, you could do a thing. So you could do something. You could be a juggler and people will notice you. You could swallow flames and people notice you. You could do a belly dancer and people will notice you. And then you could look a certain way. You could be extra beautiful. But some people make themselves important by talking a thing. And that's what we're going to focus on today. Exaggeration through speech. Why people talk. and say exaggerated things. If you think that whatever you have to say is mundane, mundane, such an interesting word, you know, in science fiction, mundane is a classification for all non-fans. So if you're a fan of the mundane really means, you know, it means worldly, it means ordinary, it means like tedious, repetitive, boring. That's what they call mundane. I'm not sure, but I think it has to do with a relationship to Danish people. You know, kind of bland Danishness. Like we think of Danes and we think of that. It may be related to that, where the word mundane comes from. I'm not exactly sure. But in science fiction, the mundanes are the people who are not fans of science fiction. Goth people, G-O-T-H people, refer to non-goth as the mundane. There's a terrible fear of being mundane. Think about goth, right? Goth is like this kind of a dark uniform and attitude and all of that that says I am extraordinary. So exaggeration, standing out from the crowd, very, very important. What if you didn't stand out from the crowd? What would happen to you? Would you get eaten up? Children often exaggerate the importance of something to their parents to get their way. In childhood, we learn that if you say something simple like, Ma, can I get this thing? No, you can't afford it. But if you exaggerate it, Ma, I need this thing for school because the teacher said that unless I have this thing, they're going to cut off my fingers, or they're going to send me home, or they're going to... And you try to build it up a little bit, maybe you'll get Ma's attention. Or maybe you can get Ma to sympathize with you. Ma, you know, I need new shoes because I got to get those new Keds because all the other kids are wearing Keds. And every time I go to school, they laugh at me. And they say to me, your family must be poor. And now if you engage your mother, who might be narcissistically concerned, she might say, well, then we better get you the right shoes. But you have to exaggerate it. Children learn that you have to exaggerate, and if any of you have children, you know exactly what you mean. You're always dealing with children's exaggerations. Exaggerations, they make things bigger than life itself, but you know, maybe the truth of it is, my friends, to children, things are bigger than life. If you have the wrong sneakers and you get humiliated even for a slight moment, it could mean a disaster to your limited, tiny little life that you've led so far. Like, maybe you have to go to the party with the other kids because if you don't show up for the party, they're going to laugh at you and they're going to talk about you. So children's exaggerations seem to be almost proportionate to their experience of life, but yet they learn that in order to get certain things done from their parents, exaggeration is a worthwhile tool because it gets the attention. There are certain personality styles that exaggerate all the time in adult life. What about the drama queen? You know, the drama queen, I mean, everything about their life is dramatic. No matter what they do, it's a drama. You can hear, you know, I walk down the street and a car almost hit me, and then they make up a story and the drama queen or the drama king, you know, a man who goes through drama after drama. What is that about? People who use words like great, fantastic, amazing, fabulous. Why do they use those words? Why excessive, exaggerated, positive words? This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. We like positive energy over here. I think it's fabulous. I think it's fantastic. I think it's great. Why such big words? But you know, there are some people who hate positivity. There are people who hate, especially if there's something about positivity that does not feel right to certain people. Because here's the secret, my friends. The reason why exaggeration works is it excites people. It is exciting, exciting. Think about these words. Think about the energy of these words. Great, fabulous, wonderful, fantastic, terrific. Compare that with nice, good, no energy. They excite you. These words excite you, and they get your blood going. You know, depressed people generally don't like people to be too exciting, because if you're depressed and you're really kind of locked into your depression, you don't want exciting people around because they stimulate you too much. Because one of the things about depression is controlling excitement. See, depressed people hate being anxious. They hate it so much they'd rather be depressed. So they hate it so much that if something comes along that reflects excitement, which is like anxiety, they want to avoid it. That's many depressed people. Some depressed people are just waiting for somebody to come along and bail them out. I mean, why do you think we want to have some man on a white horse come down and save our lives? You know, why are we waiting for this? Why are we waiting to win a lottery? We want to get out of our depression. So is the exciting the other person, the essence of exaggeration? I'm going on to exaggeration, and then I'm going to take your calls later today, my friends. Is exciting the other person the essence of exaggeration? Is it all meant to engage the energy of somebody else? Must people like to be excited? Do they? Do you like to be excited? Gossip is a form of getting people excited. You know, you start gossiping. I got news. You know, I got news. Oh, really? Tell me your news. I got to tell you what I heard he did this and I heard he did that. Oh, really? Oh, and then you turn around and now you have news. Now you have something makes you important because you have news. And so you go and you tell somebody who's living their mundane life, I got news. And they say, what is it? You know what I heard about Tony? And then maybe even add a little bit to it. You excite them. Gossip excites people. That's why people love gossip. People need to be excited. We're excited junkies. We are excitement. We want excitement. In every situation there is usually a storyteller who's exciting, you know, who's telling the story. Or if you have a party, there's music. Or if there's not music, there's cooking or food or dancing. Excitement. You got to generate excitement. You can't have a party where everybody just sits around. Actually, I went to a party recently. Where I went to a dinner where a group of religious folks were having dinner and they were just in silent prayer the entire time. I actually saw it happen. It was like, it was very quiet. It was a very, very quiet place. I'm saying that would exaggerate. It was so quiet. You couldn't imagine that if anybody dropped a fork, everybody would have had a heart attack. Because of course, that's an exaggeration. You know the other thing that people love? Babies. Babies, children, babies, they're kind of source of energy. Puppy dogs, source of energy. Kittens, energy. But babies, there's nothing better than a baby for a source of energy. You gather a group of people around a baby, a group of women could be around a baby while the group of men could be around the football game. Energy, energy, energy. Where are you going? I'm going to go eat some energy. Where are you going to get this energy? I'm going to get it from the television and watch a football game. I'm going to eat the baby. I'm going to get their energy. Right? Energy, energy, energy. Excitement. We are wired for excitement. Do you know that every one of us have a thing called ERP? I'll bet you didn't know that. ERP, ever-ready potential, ever-ready potential, which is the excitement potential of your nervous system, which is the ideal state of the nervous system, which means I am ready to be excited. I am ready to fire. Other people have a thing called homeostasis. Homeostasis is where you're not ready to fire. Homeostasis, we used to think, was the ideal. We want everything to be in balance. Oh, no, we don't want everything to be imbalanced, because if you're imbalanced, then you're starting to die. You want to be excited. Excitement, energy, neurotransmitters. Why do you think we have them? We have neurotransmitters reaching out their hands for a little excitement. Every time somebody does a radio show where they teach some meditative process on the radio show, everybody shuts off the program because they want energy. Television, energy. baby's energy. So someone who exaggerates and someone who is kind of provide this energy for you is providing it for you because you, as many of us, are an energy junkie. Here comes some excitement. So if you just tell me a mundane story like, you know what happened? I went to the grocery store. Nothing. I went to the grocery store and you know what I saw? I saw at the stand, standing right there, this lady was saying to it, now, oh, energy. Energy, I'm getting hungry now. So now, excitement is very important, and being able to excite people is important, and one of the ways to excite people is to exaggerate. People exaggerate only to themselves. There are some people who exaggerate themselves and keep themselves excited. So here's a very important question that we're going to have to pursue a little bit. Think about people who keep themselves excited. Why would you do that? Erotomania is a form of loving somebody who doesn't love you back. Erotomania is a way of staying excited by keeping sexually focused on some object who has no idea that you're even alive. But you think about them all the time. Hypochondriasis. Hypochondriasis is where you're worried about your illness. And you think everything is an illness. And you think, oh, my elbow hurts. I must have cancer of the elbow. You know what I mean? And you worry about it all the time. And you worry about your health. You worry about it. And so you eat, you know, distilled pinola nuts and things. You know, you do things to yourself because you're over-concerned about your health. Over-concerned. Obsessed. Social phobia is another way of exciting yourself. You imagine in the world that people are going to be critical of you and they're going to be, and you're going to make a fool of yourself all the time and you get nervous every time you think about it. Grandiosity in all forms. I'm the greatest. I'm the best writer. I am the best singer. You do things by yourself. Grandiosity is another form of exciting yourself. Phobias is another way we excite ourselves. You have terrible fears that you can't leave your door unlocked or that the cockroaches are going to come and get you. Phobias are all self-excitement. These are all self-excitement, my friends. Even love can be just a form of self-excitement, not based in reality. Now, this becomes a very important question. Why would people do this to themselves? Because we know that many of these things are miserable. Like phobias are miserable, social phobias miserable, hypochondriasis, terrible condition. Erotomania make you go crazy. Grandiosity makes you fall down eventually and you crumble. Why would people do this? This is Armand DeMille with you with the answer. With the positive mind. Part of what I'm teaching you today is that this is about excitement. It is about the need to excite yourself because if you don't excite yourself, you're going to slip into the doldrums. And this is one of the things that people do. And a little later today, we're going to be taking your calls about it. But excitement is so important. It brings us to the need to exaggerate. Part of the exaggeration is I'm waiting for you to exaggerate something so I could get excited. So in order for us to have a society where people exaggerate, we have to have receptivity to excitement. Not like in other cultures, like in Japan. Nobody says you can exaggerate. You can't exaggerate. You got to keep things within a range. Excitement is limited. You see? It's not welcomed. In our society, we're junkies for it. We are just waiting for it. So we're going to take a short break. And when we positive energy, and I will, we'll continue. And then we'll take your telephone calls at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. First, we'll take a short station identification, and I will be back with you right away.
Yo, this is G Love on WBAI, New York, New York.
Don't go, stay. Talkback is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, okay, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations.
Seconds,
that's Talkback
four,
right here on WBAI New York.
One.
Accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with the stuff in between. You gotta spread joy up to the maximum, bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith, or pandemonium's liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do? Just when everything looked so dark, man, they said we gotta accentuate positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Guess who, my friends? Guess who? That was Johnny Mercer. Guy who wrote Moon River and Jeepers Creepers. That was Johnny Mercer singing Accentuate the Positive. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. We were talking about excitement, and we're talking about excitement and what makes people ready. Excitement potential is what I was talking about. ERP, ever-ready potential, your ability to receive new energy. Now, why do we want to have this new energy? Why do we want to have it? Why do we want new energy to come in? Because every cell in your body is replicating and growing. See, if you leave every cell just the way it is, they die. Death is the lack of birth of new cells. So your body gets you ready for excitement, and it says, hey, let's keep a certain amount going. But what excites you? You know, shibumi? I mean, is there something that excites you that could be quiet and meditative? Yes, but there's got to be some energy going through. It is not being flat. Now, we've learned that there are people who need to keep themselves excited. And what we in the field of psychology have learned, is that people who have a tendency to overexcite themselves through phobias, obsessions, and things like that, have an underlying fear that if they didn't excite themselves, they would slide into some kind of an abyss. So if you were able to stop and completely stop an abyss, stop an excitement, an obsession, and you suddenly, if they just had a pill that stopped it, I guarantee you, you're going to have to deal with some underlying chemistry. Of course you do. There's got to be something pulling the other way to make you create something that's going to keep pulling you out of it. So if you keep stimulating yourself to get out of this place, you have to wonder, what is the place I would be in? The cure for most people who have got social phobias, hypochondriasis, grandiosity, phobias, or erotomania is to let yourself, through the therapist's help, slide into the place that you would go into if you didn't keep this activity going. What would happen to you? And you fall into it, and you fall all the way through it, and you get through this thing. You just get through it. And once you don't have the fear underneath it, it's easy to relinquish the behavior. We've learned people who need to excite themselves have a kind of a chemistry that's dependent on this obsessional kind of stuff. Now, how does this relate to exaggeration, right? Exaggerate with each other. So exaggeration is part of life because people seem to live on it. Animals live on it. Tall tales. Hey, you know tall tales? Tall tales, also known as a tall tale, is a story that claims to explain the reason for some natural phenomenon, or sometimes illustrates how skilled, intelligent, or powerful the subject of a tale was. In either case, the tale is fictional and usually obviously so. And it could be based on a real figure. But, you know, what people used to do is they used to tell tall tales to each other. And they would try to make up stories and tell each other stories. And it was like a thing you do, tell tall tales. It's almost a joke. But you don't believe it. But you try to tell a tale in such a way that it excites the person who's listening or the group that you're with. There used to be a thing called the Liars Club. I remember the Liars Club. The Liars Club were a group of people who would meet in a circle, and they would have a tin can in the middle, and they would have a nails. They would have nails. Each one would have nails, like a hammer and nails, two penny nails, or five penny nails, or three penny nails. And they'd have these nails, and so people would tell stories. And when they would tell stories, they would lie and exaggerate. And the one who would tell a story that was a big lie and an exaggeration, if the story fell through, if it fell flat, they would throw a nail in the can, and that person would stop talking. You see? And the next person would pick it up and tell tales. That's as I remember the Liars Club. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So if you need to exaggerate and you get into the habit of exaggerating because people don't pay attention to you, maybe that leads to catastrophizing. Maybe that leads to that thing that people do with themselves, which they say, you know, the landlord talked to me and he said to me that he didn't want me to have my plant in front of my door. I know that they're trying to move me out of here. I suspect that there is some coalition or group that's trying to evict me. I noticed it when I walked down the hall now. I noticed people are looking at me funny. And you catastrophize. You kind of build it into a real horrible thing. You make things worse. You can do it with children. Hey, you left the food on the table in the refrigerator in the kitchen. And there, you know, I could be cockroaches coming in. And then mice come in to eat the cockroaches. And rats come in to eat the mice. And then next thing we know, we'll have a dinosaur in our kitchen. You know, catastrophizing, disaster. You know, hey, you left the door open and anybody could walk in and rape your mother. You know, catastrophizing. Hey, wait a minute. Hold on a second. I better not leave that door open. But once you learn that the people who you are talking to tend to catastrophize, you don't believe anything they ever have to say ever again. See, that's the trouble with it. The trouble with catastrophizing is once they get your number, you're sunk. It's like crying wolf. You know what I mean? It's like that's it. You're done for. People don't believe you. I've seen parents who are catastrophizers. And once their children find out about them, they never pay attention. So like the parents will catastrophize about their health. How are you doing today, Ma? Oh, my heart. I'm not sure. The doctor said that my heart may not be steady enough for a family that doesn't pay attention to me too much, you know. And you know, after a while, really, Ma? The doctor said that? Yeah, he was a specialist from the Mayo Clinic who is specialist on family negligent heart disorders and so on and so forth. And after a while, when you get, you know, like when you're a kid, you get scared by these things. But when you grow up, you know, it's not so funny anymore. And it makes you feel sad because it makes you realize your parent was never honest with you. 212-209-2900. It's time to take a couple of calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air with me, 212-209-2900.
Not yet. No call.
Okay, 212-209-2900. What about this? How has this been in your life? Have you had any... Have you had anybody in your life who was a big exaggerator? Have you been one of them? Like I said, it seems to be a kind of a natural step for people to do, finding a way to exaggerate their lives and make things just a little bigger than they are. It's kind of even interesting because when you do it, you generate the energy. We have a world that needs energy. We welcome energy. It's a two-sided world. I promise you, any war that we're involved in is a need for energy. If we were okay people, if we weren't sliding into our own depression, we wouldn't be looking for wars and looking to create animosity. People who are not starved for energy and feel like they're going to slide into some kind of mundane world, they don't go as far out as this. That's why, you know, sometimes you see people acting in a crazy way. And you could look at them and you say, what is all that about? What's all that energy about? Hey, 212-209-2900 is our number here. I want to make some room for your calls today. Tomorrow, we've got some very interesting people on the radio that I want you to pay attention to. We have somebody coming on tomorrow who has written a book, How Would You Like to Get Sued? Hi, V, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Armand?
Good. Who is this?
My name is Ron.
Hello, Ron.
And I'm calling you really touched something. I've noticed with my mother and actually my aunt. My aunt has never really been married. She's older now, and sort of her hypochondria, she's been getting older. Has been getting worse, and I've noticed ever since my father passed away, my mother, as she's getting older and living alone, has seemed to have that exaggerating tendencies to be paranoid about certain things in her home.
Like what does your mother worry about?
Well, all the little stuff, you know, when lights are on, or if somebody actually even tries to help her at times, she always is looking for an ulterior motive of why that person is trying to help her. And it always concerned me because I would always look at her and sort of say, Mom, I genuinely would know those people and say, I think they're really just trying to help you. They're not trying to pull one over on you.
So now you set up a system where if your mom says a paranoid fear,
right. You
become reality and okay. Then you soothe her out of it. So what do you think would happen? Let's imagine this now. What do you think would happen if you said to your mom, wow, Mom, that's really terrible. I hope that doesn't happen. Now, what do you think would happen? What would happen if you didn't balance it, if you
right. Didn't
get pulled in on it, if she, you know, exaggerated something and gave you a fear, and you took it and said, you know, that I think that may be a reality or maybe not a reality, but I'm not going to deal with it either way. I'm terribly sorry for you. I hope it's okay.
I guess she would be forced to deal with the situation on her own.
Or there might not even be a situation. You see,
right. You're
part of it.
Right,
when
right.
you become the negative for the positive or the positive for the negative, you become a part of it. This is what happens in the world.
Okay.
Energy is an exchange. Your
right. Mom
probably knows you need to do this.
Right.
Like you've got to be her savior.
Right.
You know, maybe if she didn't need you to, maybe if you didn't need to be her savior, you can let her live a life and she wouldn't have to get so crazy.
Absolutely. No,
doesn't that sound convoluted?
Not at all, actually.
Convoluted. You know, hey, my son's my savior. Okay, son, you want to feel like a savior?
Right.
It's like I know women who invite men over to their houses and ask the men to always do something for them. You know, would you reach this book up and put it on the top shelf?
Sure.
And why do they do it? They don't need it on the top shelf. After the guy puts it on the top shelf, they ask the next guy, could you get down that book from the top shelf? And then the next one, could you put that back up on the top shelf? Because it makes the person feel like they're doing something.
Right.
You know, poor book. It just wants to sit there. Nobody ever reads it.
Armand, it's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. So we need to understand in ourselves that we may be feeding an energetic system that is dysfunctional because it is us that needs it. Do you know what I mean? It could be us that needs it. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hey, yes, hi there.
Yes, hi, Armand. I've been listening to your show for many years, and I really love it.
Great, thank you. What's your name?
My name is Leonore.
Leonore. Hi there.
Well, with me, I noticed that my husband and my mother-in-law, they both seem to exaggerate a lot. And I'm one of those people, like you mentioned before, I don't really like to get excited because it does make me feel uncomfortable to get, like, so overly excited.
You don't like it? How about excited at all? Are you...
Well, happy excited, yes, but I don't like to feel like, someone's making me excited to be scared or to be nervous about things because I feel like I need to be more in control of, I guess how I'm feeling.
Well, let me ask you something. If you went to a petting zoo, did you ever go to a petting zoo?
Yes.
Did you ever feed a bunch of goats and chickens?
Yes.
And they all come around you at once? And
yes.
Then they really start climbing up on you for food?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever, what's that experience like for you?
Well, that's wonderful. That's beautiful.
Oh, good. Okay. Thank you very much. There are certain people who can't stand the excitement. So you're teaching me about you and excitement. Good. That's a good thing, right?
Yes.
Okay. So you don't really need to be stimulated, but you're obviously your husband... tends to exaggerate things, and you're on the other side of it.
Yeah, and, well, what's happened recently is before when he would feel sick or, he would just say, oh, I'm so sick, I'm suffering, I'm in pain, and, after about 10 years of that, you say, well, okay, this you've been saying this for, like, 10 years. Well, recently he did have a cancer scare, and, I find that I tend to be in the same mode that I was before of trying not to be overexcited because I feel like I need to create my own emotional response to be able to handle it. For instance, he's going to be having surgery in a few weeks. And I feel like, well, the doctors are happy. They think they're pretty sure they've got it all in time. And, I just feel like I don't want to catastrophize it because if I do, I won't be able to handle it.
Well, yeah, you're caught in a kind of a place here, you see.
But I get him wanting me to react to it. And so he does, he talks about it and says things in such a way as to get a reaction out of it or to sort of put a hook in me to get reactions from me to make it worse. And, recently he kind of did get a reaction out of me. And now instead of being calm as I was before, now I find that I'm catastrophizing a little bit or just, not reacting.
That's the idea. So he's scared. He's scared, and he wants you to balance his fear by telling him things are not so bad. You understand? He wants you to believe it in some level, but once you get overexcited, he's probably going to calm you down. Once you get too worried, he's probably going to calm you down. Have you ever gotten really, really worried in front of him?
No.
So maybe what you got to do is take the other side of it. So now that he worries you, get worried. See what happens if you join him instead of combating him, instead of being on the other side of it. See if you say, oh, my God, I don't know what we're going to do. Geez, if this doesn't work, I don't know. And get excited. Watch what happens. As soon as you take on the fear instead of being his fear balance, he's going to balance you. He's going to tell you to calm down and stop worrying so much. It happens. Give it a try. Try to shift the energy. Just imagine it's an energy field,
Yes. Thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, have a good day.
Thank you. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Another call. Ty, there. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi there.
Oh, Armand.
Yes.
This is Jerry. You probably know my friend Rosellen. She's a frequent caller.
Sure, I know Rosellen, a frequent caller.
Okay, and she probably talked about me. Well, this show on exaggeration fits her to a T. Okay.
You mean everything she said about you, Jerry, was not true?
Probably is. But I'm just saying.
you were great and wonderful and fantastic and all that.
Right. Maybe she exaggerates a little bit. But my point is, she's very excitable. I love her, but She does get very excited at work. She what's the word you use? Catastrophizes and all. Like I say, a lot of things you said just fits her to a T. So I happen to be with her now, and she goes, "Oh, you want to call?" And I say, "You know what? This would be the perfect time to introduce myself."
Yeah, but you see, the her excitement and her catastrophizing, in some way, feels good to you.
Yeah, we
don't you calm her down? Don't you tell her? Don't worry about it, baby.
Oh, sure, sure.
Now think about that.
I guess we kind of compliment each other.
Yeah, and so that's what I mean by the compliment. Wherever there's somebody who gets very excited, there's usually somebody who's saying, "Don't worry so much."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You see, now this is the balance between the two of you. If you didn't like it, the thing you would do is get as excited as she does and get as worried as she does, and what will happen is she'll switch shoes with you. She'll start calming you down. You see, it's an energy balance. Yes, it would actually happen. You would watch that happen because it's an energy balance between the two of you. She gets excited, you calm her down. She gets excited, you calm her down.
Uh-huh.
So now, instead, she gets excited, you get excited. She looks at you and says, "What are you doing getting excited? You're supposed to be calming me down." And she'll start calming you down. And my best wishes to her, knowing that she's listening right now.
Yeah. Oh, she's a big fan. I know a couple of times you might have put her in a place, but no, she is a big fan. And she's turning me on to you, too. So.
I'm glad. Thank you very much for calling in,
Okay,
Jerry.
You're welcome, Armand.
Nice to talk to you. 212-209-2900. One more call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Tinua.
Tina?
Tinua.
Tinua. Hi there. Are you excited to be on the telephone?
Yeah, this is my first time.
First time? How old are you, Tinua?
I'm 17.
17 years old. Thanks for calling in. You listen to this program? Do you have a lot of friends who exaggerate things?
I'm like the person who exaggerates things.
Yeah, what do you like to exaggerate? Give me an example of something you exaggerated.
Like, my wisdom teeth are coming in.
Yeah.
And it kind of hurts. And, like, I was getting worried that, like, my teeth would shift and I had to get braces. So I kind of exaggerated to my mom how much it hurt so she would get a doctor's appointment really quick.
Good. So, I see, that proves my point. Proves my point that if you didn't exaggerate how it hurt, she might not get the doctor's appointment as quick.
Yeah.
But you were afraid that something would happen to you.
Yeah.
You couldn't go. Would you go to your mother and say, "Mom, I'm afraid that something would happen to me, and I know the pain's not so bad, but could you make the doctor's appointment right away anyway?" What would happen?
She would probably be like, "Why are you so afraid?" Kind of like in an angry voice.
Ah, like you shouldn't be afraid.
Yeah.
So you got to invent things to make her not be critical of you. Yeah, it's very important. Young people, when your parents are critical of your energy and your fears, that's one of the ways to get past them is to exaggerate them. So you make a very good point. That's a very intelligent perception on your part. So you would like her not to criticize you so much, right?
Yeah, I guess.
You think there's no chance that she would stop criticizing you?
Well, I don't think she, like, does it on purpose. Just that she doesn't want us to, like, feel afraid or whatever. And she gets excited, too. So, like, if we're upset or something, she'll get really upset.
Hmm. What's it like when your mom gets really upset, Tina?
It's scary, because... Like, this summer, we went to visit our father, who is in Maine, and we were arguing with him, and we got really upset, and I called my mom, and I was crying, and she got so upset. She's like, "I want you guys to get airplane tickets away from there right now, or else I'm going to call the cops on that place."
And that's not what you wanted from her, huh?
No.
What did you want her to say to you?
Like, I don't know, just because I was in, like, a public place, so if someone saw me crying, it would have been a really big deal. It wasn't like we were at home.
So what did you want her to say to you?
I don't know. Okay, you don't have to be so upset about it. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't have to be so upset about it. It's really okay. Right? That would have been really ideal.
Yeah.
Well, I understand. You know, when you have your children, you learn this lesson about what you could do with them. Teen, what makes you listen to WBAI? How come you happen to tune in the radio today?
My physics teacher.
Yeah?
He's always telling us to listen to the radio station, and he would give us, like, if we listen, he'd give us extra credit. So I started listening, and they had, like, Malcolm X stuff like that, so I thought that was interesting, so I kept listening, and then I heard your radio station once. And while I was in Maine, when I was so upset, I would listen to, like, your archives on the internet, and that helped. And, like, I'm usually in the house a lot, so I don't have a lot to do.
So, Tinoa, if you ever need me for anything, you feel free to call me or send me an email.
I did.
You did?
Yes.
Oh. Then I must have responded to it, did I?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, good. Well, you're a friend forever. If you ever need me for anything, you let me know.
Okay.
Tinoa, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening, and thanks for calling in.
Okay, but wait, let me spell my name so you know how to pronounce it.
Yes.
C-H-I-N-W-E.
Oh, Chinwa. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So nice of her to want me to pronounce her name right. Love it. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Young children learning from the radio, listening to archives. Fabulous thing. www.thepositivemind.com. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.